Claro, porque tipo. Thank you for the wonderful introduction. My name is Asa. I've been with Mozilla since 1998. The first 2 years I was volunteering on the project, contributing my own spare time, even though I had a regular full-time job. After 2000, I got hired to continue to work on Mozilla in the area of organizing communities, bringing volunteers to the project. So I'm here to talk to you today a little bit about the history of the project, where we are today, and where we're going. Mostly, I'd like you to understand a little bit about Mozilla so that hopefully you can explain how Firefox works and why it's important to your friends and your families and your neighbors. And to be able to explain it to them in a way they'll understand so they will then explain it to the next group. We've got a lot of the early adopters, the people like us, the geeks, and the power users. And all of us got our families to use Firefox and our friends use Firefox. But they don't really understand why. And so they don't spread it out to the next group of people. I don't know if JT mentioned it, but 80% of the people who use Firefox use it because someone told them to, a friend or a schoolmate or a neighbor or their child or their parent or their teacher. Someone told them to. And that's 100 million people. 100 million people. In Brazil alone, it's 3.5 million people. This is the first time we've ever come to Brazil. Mozilla has done nothing in Brazil to promote Firefox. The promotion has come from people in Brazil who are using Firefox and telling others about it. And one of the interesting early places that promotion started was with the group of volunteers who translated Firefox from English to Brazilian Portuguese. Right now, Firefox, the people up in the US who made Firefox, the core team, and I'll talk more about that in a minute, we make it in English, in one language. All of the other languages that we support, all of the other languages that are available, including Brazilian Portuguese, come from volunteers in those countries. And so that group of people translated Firefox so that you all can use it in your native language, and then you all spread it by telling other people how good it is. And they tell other people. What we need to learn is how we can spread faster, because even though we have 3.5 million users in Brazil, that's actually kind of low. Our global average is about 15% of the market, and Brazil is at about 12 or 12.5%. So we're a little below average in Brazil. We'd like to raise that to see 25% or half of the people in Brazil using Firefox. And we'll talk a little bit about the reasons we think that's important. To start with, I'm going to tell you what Mozilla is. There's a lot of confusion because Mozilla is an organization, Mozilla is a community, Mozilla is a web browser. Here's what we think Mozilla is. First and foremost, it's a global organization working to promote choice and innovation on the web. We do that via this number 4 point. We make Firefox, web browser, Thunderbird email in order to promote choice and innovation. We're also here for the users. We make Firefox so that users can have a better experience on the web. There is no business motivation, there's no profit motivation, there's no big corporate company trying to get something from the user. It's the opposite. We're trying to give something to the user. We're a non-profit, public benefit, charity organization. So we're doing this for the good of the world and the good of the users. Third, we're an open source project. The most successful consumer open source project in the world. There are no other open source projects for user software that have anywhere near 100 million users. There are some on servers. You all may know Apache and Vine and some of these infrastructure pieces that are deployed to millions of servers. But no piece of consumer software in open source has ever come close to Firefox and users. This is a quick diagram of the platform, what it looks like. I don't want to get too detailed because I can take a long time talking about it, but the important point is most of the code is underneath the surface, like any large software project. The applications live on top of this platform. So the same Gecko Mozilla platform is what Firefox is built on top of. It's what Camino is built on top of. It's what DualRunner and Thunderbird and SeaMonkey and Songbird and AllPierce and all these other products are built on top of our platform. The platform runs on every operating system in the world, pretty much. Mac, Windows, and Linux, of course, but a whole bunch of others. They're porting it to Amiga. Who uses Amiga? Apparently some Amiga fanatics. But the cool thing is, all you have to do is port this one layer, NSTR, to your platform, and everything else will mostly work. So it's easy to make Firefox run on a whole bunch of different operating systems. The really cool part is, this is from top to bottom, 9 million lines of code. 9 million lines of code. That top part, Firefox, less than 1 million lines of code. So the majority of what we do is in this flat part. The top part's where all of the glory and the fame, the sexy part, it's only one tenth of the product. It's the small piece. It's important because that's what the user interacts with. But this is what makes Firefox happen. This is a collection of C++, JavaScript, our own cross-platform COM implementation, and a few other bits and pieces. A graphics engine powered by Cairo, which is another open source project. It's a really neat collection of technologies. Each of these code modules are an area looking for new contributors. So if you'd like to help program for Firefox, find something in here that's interesting to you and go to town. Numbers. I mentioned 100 million users. Firefox has 100 million users today. If you look over a month period, there are 100 million people who go to the web using Firefox. In one day, 35 million people. Every single day, there are 35 million unique people who go online using Firefox. We've got 2,500 extensions. These are add-ons or features for Firefox. You guys use Firefox? Yeah. Pull your Firefox? Use add-ons and extensions? Okay, I won't go into those too much, but if you don't use them, go find them. This is where you make Firefox your browser. It's how you make Firefox work for you. We have 41 languages today, and it's growing. We make Firefox in English. Volunteers around the world make it in 60 or 70 other languages. 41 of them are ready to ship with Firefox 2. We think it will be 60 or 70 when we get to Firefox 3. Done all by volunteers. And all of these ship simultaneously. We don't ship English and then a month later you get German and Japanese and Chinese and French. And then a month later you get the tier 3 countries and then the tier 4 countries. I don't know where Brazil falls, but I don't care. You guys get the browser the same day that we get it in the United States. And that's thanks to the effort of our volunteer community. We also have about 16% of the global market share, about 800 million users on the web. And if you look at how much of that usage is happening, we're about 16% globally. I'll show you a slide that breaks that down a little bit more. We're 1,600 developers. Mozilla, we pay 40 engineers. There are 1,600 engineers contributing to every release of Mozilla. All of those others, almost all those others, volunteered on the project, making a major contribution. We have tens of thousands of volunteers who are testing it, who are spreading the word to spread Firefox, who are at local events like this, who are installing it on their neighbor's computer and telling their friends about it. This is our community, this is our marketing and evangelism community, thousands and thousands of people. We do all of that with less than 100 employees at Mozilla. What the employees at Mozilla do is a lot of coordination, reaching out and helping other people get involved. That's what JT and I are here to do. We're here to help you find a way to plug into and do something to help Mozilla and Firefox in Brazil. Because we think it's a better web, it's a better web experience, and it's the safest way for all of your friends and family and colleagues and coworkers and teachers and everyone to browse the web, especially given the fact that so many people are on, shall we say, not fully legal versions of Windows. That means you don't get Windows Update, that means you don't get IE Update. That means you are vulnerable if you're using IE to serious exploits. Every day of the year, there are dozens of exploits that can be infecting your computer with viruses and spyware network. And even if I wasn't with Firefox, I'd be telling you to get on something else, because that's a horrible, horrible situation for people to be in, and we want to help them out by getting them onto Firefox. We do security updates, even if your copy of Windows isn't, shall we say, 100% legal. you still get security updates with Firefox, and very quickly. I'll talk more about that later. But we do this all with 100 people, 40 engineers, and how we do that is by harnessing the resources of this global community of people who care about the web. We're looking for an opportunity to learn programming. We're looking for hard problems to solve. We're looking to spread the word to their friends and family who want to be famous. A whole bunch of reasons who want to make money. But we do it with this global network of people. Quick look at the world. We're about 15% of the market in the US. We're at about 25% of the market in Europe. We're doing quite well in Europe. If you break Europe down, you look at Germany and Poland, we're like 35%, 40%. Slovenia, we're going to hit 50% this year. We're going to get 50% of all of the users in the country of Slovenia. That means we'll have 3 of the 6 users in Slovenia. I'm kidding. When I go to Slovenia, I'm going to be talking about Brazil, so you guys need to up this number too. But if you look at Asia, we're about 12%, which is a little below our 16% global average. look at South America and look at Brazil in particular, 12.5% below our average, our global average. Why is that? There's nothing getting in the way here. If anything, this should be the right place for Firefox to take off more than anywhere else in the world. Get all of these bad copies of Windows that don't get updated, get a secure browser and put it on top of it. There's open source friendly people here. Firefox is the leading open source application on the web. No questions asked. The top browser. The best features. It should totally be doing better here. Australia, they're beating you guys by like double. You can beat Australia. Those guys are prisoners that came down from England a couple of years ago. They can walk away. You guys can do better than that, right? Here's a quick look at some of the languages that Firefox is available in. Of course, it's available in Brazilian Portuguese and has been available for a long time thanks to some dedicated volunteers that live here in Brazil who make sure with every single release the whole product is translated and translated well. If any of you use bad translated software, or it was done by people who didn't know what they were talking about or didn't really speak the language, awful experience, right? It's horrible. These guys are amazing. It really does feel real. All across the world, every one of these teams, when people, I think people who are using that browser, they can't believe it. It's better than professional quality. I worked for a brief time at Netscape. They paid me to work on Mozilla when I first got hired. They paid teams to translate Netscape into their tier one languages, which was PJK, Korea, Japan, China, French, and German. And everyone I talked to who used those translated, professionally translated versions said they were total shit, total garbage, right? Our community, after Netscape sort of faded away, took over those translations and cleaned them up. And now when I talk to those people, they can't believe that it's not professional. And they're embarrassed by the previous professional versions. The volunteers who do this because they love it, because it's a really fun project for them, do a much better job than some poor guys sitting in a basement somewhere being paid to, okay, what's this word, what's this word. These are people who love Firefox, love the web, and love you guys as users. They want to make it. They're proud of this project. It's theirs, and it's yours too. So we're going to look at ways you can make Firefox your project as well. JT will talk about this a little bit, but I think the important thing to note here is that you guys are pretty high on the list. You got, this is in rank how many internet users? You have 32 million internet users. That's a lot of people that should be using Firefox. Right now, a lot of them aren't. And we need to get that up. In the US, you can see we've got about 211 million users, and we've got about 14% of them are using Firefox. We actually have offices now spread around the world. We've got offices in the United States, of course, where we are. We've got an office that we just opened in China. We've got an office in Japan. We've got an office in France that covers most of Europe, and they're really helping us in Europe. And we've got, let's see, what are offices? That's our main offices. But we can't afford to go to every country and set up an office, right? It's very expensive to hire up a team of people, to get an office in place, to pay taxes, to buy an office space. It's just a mess, and we can't afford to do that. So we've done it in a few strategic places, where we think the only way to grow there is by having an official Mozilla presence on the ground. But here we don't think we need them. We think you guys are the official Mozilla presence on the ground. You're empowered to speak for Mozilla and help spread the word and to help more people get on Mozilla. And I think that having an office here where we spend resources to send some Americans down to tell you what's the right thing to do, that's bogus. That's total bullshit, right? You guys know better than anyone how Brazilians use the web and how Firefox can make a better web experience for them. So we want to see that number changing up. Firefox, you guys mostly use it, so I'm not spending any time on here, but we got some good features. Integrated search, we were the first in the best. You got the most choices, we got, you know, search suggestions, pop-up blocking. Do you remember the web before pop-up blocking? JT was in the airport the other day, and we couldn't get the Wi-Fi to work on our laptop, so he went up to a little internet cafe, a little cheap LAN house, bought an hour worth of time on the computer, sat down, and all they had was Internet Explorer 6. In 20 minutes, he was running away from that. Horrible.
It's terrible.
It was and he's not just saying that because he's a Mozilla person, right?
I had stuff I needed to do, and it was bad.
He couldn't get anything out. He left. He left his time on the computer. Like, forget that shit, right?
And we just got back from a company that's very big that says 70% of their users use Internet Explorer 6. That means 70% of Brazilians are using a shitty product.
That is slow, that is full of viruses, that has pop-ups out all over the place. And we're enjoying the web, and you're not. And that's not fair.
Exactly.
Because we know a little better that we should have a better experience and they should suffer. Just like that, right? We need to connect with all those people who are stuck on IE6, especially people that are stuck on Windows 98 and IE5, and Windows XP and IE6. that are on copies that, shall we say, aren't fully legal. those people need to get Firefox. Even if I didn't work for Firefox, I was doing this as a volunteer before. I love it. I would do it. They stop paying me. Don't tell them that. But we really, really, really need to get people on stuff, better stuff, easier. Tab browsing. I mean, what did we do before tab browsing? I can't live without it. It's a ridiculous experience to have all these windows. I just don't understand what I did before tab browsing. One update is really important. We don't use Windows Update System, and that means if your copy of Windows that you're still going to get updates for Firefox. You're going to stay safe, right? We really care about security. It is the number one feature. It's not under features, it's there. Security really matters to us. User experience. What do we do with Firefox 2? You guys mostly know this, but we didn't add 10 million new features. Nobody wants 10 million features. A good friend of mine, Blake Ross, who helped start the Firefox project, we were being interviewed by a newspaper from France called Le Monde, and the guy kept saying, what's the next big thing? Come on, what's the next big Firefox feature? When you ship Firefox 2, what are you going to add to it? How's the web going to get better? He kept asking, and we'd like to avoid the question. What's the next big thing? And finally, Blake said, the next big thing is doing the last big thing right. Right? And I really believe this. So what we did, we took a look at Firefox 1.5 and Firefox 1.0, and we looked at all the feedback from the millions of users. We looked at all the extensions that had millions of users. We said, how can we improve the existing experience without getting in the way of users? Improvements in tab browsing was a place that we agreed we could make stuff. Because when we first launched tab browsing, no one knew what it was, and we were afraid to make it too complicated because we wanted it to be a simple, easy to learn, new experience. But now a lot of people were using it, and we decided we're going to make improvements. First thing, undo closed tab. Your closed tab is better than they make. Oh shit, I closed one too many, right? Reopen it now. Easy as that, right? Easy. We add that. It's not in the way. You don't use it until you need it. The next thing, session restore. This was a great extension that became very popular. You've got 10 windows open, 10 tabs open. You're composing an email in one, you're writing a blog post in another, you're uploading a picture in another. Bang, your computer crashes or the browser freezes up and crashes sometimes. And you're like, oh shit, I've lost all of this work. I've been hours and hours at work here. You start Firefox, all the tabs come up, all your text boxes are filled in with whatever you were typing, everything is restored right there. Now this isn't a great feature, it's just doing the right thing. Right? We looked at things that were painful, that hurt, that made you yell and scream, and then it goes out of the way. Right? It's not features, it's just making it work. Search suggestions. You're typing in search and you don't know how to spell the word. Well, now it drops down some suggestions to give you tips of what you might be searching for. Frame it, super easy to answer. Of course we want this. The search services offer that. We should integrate that to the browser along with other search features. Security, two things. We have two major approaches to security. One is fix bugs. All complex software has bugs, no doubt. You guys, engineers, developers, software people in here, if your software has more than 200-300 lines of code, you got a bug. If your software connects to the web, you got security bugs, right? We have 9 million lines of code. We have the most brilliant browser team in the world. I'm not making that up. Brent and I invented JavaScript. He built our JavaScript engine. Right? The man who invented JavaScript and gave us the dynamic web, he's one of our core module owners, right? The people who defined the standard, who invented XML, the people who invented CSS and defined the CSS standards, they work for us. We have the most powerful, competent, knowledgeable, experienced team of browser makers in the world. And one of the things that we really focus on with that team is let's fix those bugs. Because they create bugs. Brendan and I can introduce some bugs all the time. I'm one of the release managers trying to get the product shipped. Brendan changes some code, breaks things. I'm like, damn, Brendan. Of course, he invents JavaScript, so I don't really say damn, Brendan. But my point being that all complex software has bugs, and if your software connects to unknown computers out there on the web, you've got security bugs. The answer is not to pretend you don't have them, to hide them behind a wall. The answer is to acknowledge that you've got the problems, to work with the people who find them, to solve the problems, to fix them quickly and get the fix in the hands of the users. Firefox is very focused, the whole team is very focused on admit when you have a problem, that's the first step, right? Fix it and get it to the users quickly. The second approach is adding features that will help the user be safe and secure. One we have with Firefox 2 is called phishing protection. You get those phishing emails, scams trying to get you to give them your credentials or your credit card number, you go to that site, we block it out, and we tell the user, your site is trying to fraud you. This is a forgery site. Get me the hell out of here. Right? You click the link, it takes you back to your homepage, you're safe, you just saved your credit card. With Firefox 3, you're going to be adding another layer of protection. That sites that try to download and install spyware and adware and viruses, we're going to warn the same way before you can go to the site. We don't let you go to the site until you see the warning. But more important, I think, than the features is our response to security. Security is about fixing bugs. You will have bugs. You will have security bugs. And the answer is to fix them quickly. There was a study, an independent study, from a major newspaper in the United States called the Washington Post. And the tech writer of the Washington Post, highly respected security writer, he looked at all of the bugs in 2006 for all the browsers, and he said, how long did it take from the time they announced the bug till they fixed the bug? That's the window when users are vulnerable. That's the window when bad guys can attack their users. And he found in 2006 that for the whole year, Firefox was only vulnerable for 9 days. He looked at Internet Explorer 6 and all Internet Explorer browsers. In that year, Internet Explorer 6 fully patched, even assuming you have a legal copy of Windows and you stay up to date, you were still at risk for 284 days out of the year. This is real security. When people talk about, well, they have 7 bugs, and they have 2 bugs, and they have 14, so they must be better, that's bullshit. The number of bugs doesn't matter. The response to those bugs matters. Right? You could have 1 bug, but if it was vulnerable for 284 days, most of the year, everyone using IE was vulnerable. We get 50,000, but if we fix them all immediately and get that fixed to the user in less than 9 days, we have a better security story than Microsoft. And because we don't use Windows Update, we're not vulnerable to bugs in that system either. But this is really, really important. This is what security is about. It's about customer service. It's about the response, about taking it seriously and not trying to hide it. Extensions, if you don't know about them, go learn about them. It's really, really good stuff. I'm not going to spend any time talking about this. I think you guys probably know most of this. I want to talk a little bit about the people, though, the organization, how big we are. I'm one person. I organize community. I help to get people involved. Mozilla Corporation has 40 engineers. I'm one person. I help some other organization with 40 people. This isn't the team that makes the browser. We have hundreds of engineers every single day contributing code to Mozilla who are not part of the corporation. But they're not the ones that make it up. We have thousands of people reviewing code, testing patches, submitting patches, a large base of technical contributors. But that's not even the whole community. We have 10,000 people every single night who download the latest snapshot. All the changes since yesterday, download those changes every single day, test them, and report hundreds of bugs. Most of them duplicates of the same high-profile problem that have been introduced the day before. But we have massive, massive testing. This cannot be, you just can't match that in any closed-source software. But that's not it. When we ship an alpha or a beta, we have 500,000 to 1 million people that download our alphas and betas, and they file bug reports, they offer suggestions in our feedback forums, they go to our forums. They're all over the place giving us feedback about the quality of that product. But that's not it. We have 100 million users. 100 million users. And they all feedback. Tell us about their favorite extension. Report bugs. Give us feedback to the Hendrix feedback reporting tool. Go into the forums and tell us what's working and what's not working. Come up to our events and tell us how people use the web in their country or how they can help spread the word in their country. We're a huge organization. And man, it's really wild. This is actually about 40%. My numbers are a little off here. 40% of the code that was contributed to Firefox 2 came with volunteers. 40%. We couldn't ship Firefox without the volunteers. We couldn't come close. We'd have to double our staff just to make up for what the developers do. Now think about those other big circles, the testers, the people who are downloading every single night, the beta testers. We could never do this in a closed company like Apple or Microsoft. It's just not possible. So how do we do this with all the shit coming at us at 100 miles, 200 kilometers an hour, all the flying, and we're trying to coordinate. It's coming from countries all over the world. Some of it's coming on weekdays for 10 hours straight by full-time employees. Some of it's coming on weekends. Some of it's coming early in the morning, late in the day. Guess what? In India, it's the exact opposite time of day as it is on the West Coast in the U.S. Our India contributors are going to sleep when we wake up. It's really, really chaotic, and it's all coming at us at high speed. 300,000 lines of code changed every quarter, every 3 months. 300,000 lines of code changes. How do we manage it? Well, it's kind of crazy. Look at it, right? Anyone can participate, and this leads to chaos. We have thousands of people reporting bugs. This bug was reported 116 times. Different reports of the same problem. 116 people went in and said, I found this problem. We need to fix that. anyone can comment in a bug. Do you see this number here? That's how many people commented in this one bug. I love Firefox. I hate Firefox. I love this feature. I hate this feature. You guys are wonderful. You guys are assholes, right? But the whole spectrum put out 725 comments, and engineers are trying to work on this problem. It's really, really chaotic. Anyone can submit code. You can walk up to Mozilla right now and say, here's a patch for a new feature. Here's a patch to fix a bug. Here's a patch to fix a crash. Here's a patch to get you 10% better performance on web pages. Anyone can submit patches. This would be crazy. If this was like Wikipedia and it was totally open, forget about it, right? Open source is not a democracy. It is not a democracy. Open source, in order to bring order to open source, you have a process. It's more like a meritocracy. And it's hierarchical, levels of involvement and ownership. And at the top, we've got a benevolent dictator. That's Brent Knight, inventor of JavaScript. If there's ever a question and it escalates up to the top, he's the dictator at the top. That's how real open source works. Accountability, responsibility, and not everyone can approve that change. Anyone can come try to participate, but it must go through our leadership structure. This is Mike Connor. He's the module owner for the Firefox front end, sort of. Strong leadership. We insist on multiple code reviews. If you guys are developing software and it gets it all complex beyond 100 lines of code, get someone else to look at it. At least one other person. We all make student mistakes. Sometimes we make smart mistakes, but nonetheless, we need someone else to look at our code. So how does this work in Mozilla? Anyone can submit a patch. You can submit a patch. It doesn't go into Firefox. Not like Wikipedia. First, it goes to the module owner, the person who owns that area of code. Remember I showed you the architecture diagram, how little squares, a little box. Each one of those is a module or a cluster of modules. That person, that module has an owner, a dictator for that piece of code. And he has a set of peers. And you must get review from him and one of his peers before that code can go in. But that's not enough. Modules interact with other modules. So you need to get a review from a person who understands the interaction between the different modules. Most of the module owners, they know their own code really, really well, but how it interacts with the code over there, they might not know. There's another group of people that understand something about all of the modules and how they interact. You have to get super review for your code. Next, you might be able to check it into the development trunk, the unstable trunk, where testing happens. Those 10,000 people download every night, and if you're lucky, it gets good, positive feedback. And it goes to the release team. I'm on that team. We decide, is this something we want in the next version of Firefox? Or should it wait till the version after? Or should we remove it altogether, which is experimental? And if the release team likes it, then it gets checked in on the release branch. This is the branch where we will ship Firefox 2 or Firefox 3. And that's low change, high testing. If it tests well on the branch when we ship a beta or an alpha, then, and only then, is it making Firefox. This is the order that we apply to the development process so that it is not like Wikipedia, so that it is not a democracy. Democracy are bad. It's a meritocratic hierarchy with a benevolent dictator at the top. It's about earning reputation, earning merit, getting more responsibility as you earn it, and then ownership and layers of review with one person as the ultimate authority at the top. Otherwise, you can never move forward. That's not interesting. That's interesting. This is actually kind of cool. We have a tool so that every time people are changing code all around the world, all of these columns are a build machine. A machine that is checking out the code, compiling it, and running some tests on it. So when these people check in, their name shows up for this compile cycle. Their code made it into each of these, got compiled and had tests run on it. The tests check on performance and memory usage and startup time and things like that. It also tests against a bunch of these Ajax toolkits like Dojo and jQuery and all those guys, so we make sure we don't break any of those. But each one of these columns is a machine, and if it gets the code and it compiles and it fails the test, it turns orange. And then we look who made changes during that time. Seth Spitzer, that bastard broke something. Actually, not. It's a wonderful celebrant. Don't tell him I said that. No, he's actually the guy who helped me get involved in Mozilla Academy and making ideas. Amazing, amazing guy. But we have accountability, and it's across platform. So Seth was clearly testing on Linux and testing on Mac,
but not testing on Windows. But the system caught it, and he'll change that code very quickly because everyone is looking at him right now. And his reputation is on the line, and reputation all that matters is, right? That's how you get involved. When we hire someone, they don't need to go change the code. They have to earn their way up, just like anybody else. It's all about reputation. And this is one of the tools that helps us coordinate all of that rapid change while we keep Mozilla always working and always getting faster and never regressing. Firefox for web developers, if you make web pages, get Firefox. It's stupid not to get Firefox. It's stupid not to. I won't say anything else about that. So what's next? JavaScript 2, really exciting stuff. A reimagining of the entire JavaScript language is going to be much more comfortable for people who are used to programming like C and C++. They're going to like a lot of the features of JavaScript 2. Brandon Knight is writing that, and he's working with the scripting folks from Adobe. We're working on the scripting support for Adobe Flex and Apollo and all that. They're joining forces to make JavaScript 2. If you write anything and you want to work on the web, JavaScript is the place to do it. JavaScript 2 is going to be really, really cool. Offline support. You're in a web application composing a blog post or an email, and you don't have a connection, or you lose your connection, or you're offline and you're reading mail and you want to reply to one, go ahead and compose it, send it off, and you connect to the net again, it all syncs, it all gets sent out. You don't have to worry about whether you're online or offline anymore. This is up to web applications to implement. They can do it against the feature we have. So we can tell the web application, they can ask us, is the browser online or offline? Is it going online or is it coming offline? And it can make adjustments and it can store data locally with Firefox in an SQLite server so that it can be accessed offline. Microformat, cool stuff. If you don't know what microformat is, go read about it. Really, really cool idea, bringing structured content to the web. You get an address book item that's in a web page or a calendar event and it's just on the web, and getting it into your calendar means retyping it or copying and pasting. Wrap it up in microformats, the browser recognizes the calendar item, one click send it to your calendar. One click send it to the web service that handles your calendar. It's going to be really, really cool, so if you're into web development, check that out. New graphics engine, 2D acceleration, SVG with fonts on a curve, and animation, and all kinds of cool shit like that. What does all that mean? We do it big. Programming on Mars. Programming in the fishbowl, visible to everyone. Participation from people all over the globe. Participation from people speaking 100 languages. People writing code in 10 different languages. All contributing simultaneously every day to make Firefox better, to make it more secure, to make the features better and more useful, to make it more appropriate for the different geographies or different languages of the world, to spread the word, to grow the community, to get more users. We want to make it fun. It's not fun if volunteers don't participate. So we like to have gatherings and events where we go out and talk to people. When we ship Firefox 2, we have parties all over the world, like 500 parties. Like, just celebrating the launch of Firefox 2, we sent them all t-shirts that were given out, Firefox Celebration t-shirts at the party. Parties had like 200, 300, 400 people out. Someone threw a concert and had like 3,000 people showed up. We want Brazil to have like a big, you had this party, right?
And there's 1,000 places too, right?
And you can probably throw a party, right? There's someone here who knows how to throw a party. You can at least attend a party, right? But like, go do something fun. Like, I don't know, make it an event, get news coverage. I want your party to be hardcore, right? Get the news crew there reporting what shit went down at your party. But making it fun is really important. Also, I think we need to make the web indistinguishable from the desktop. The web is going to replace the desktop. We've been saying this for a long time, it's happening. I can go into it with you guys if you want to talk about that at our event this evening, but it's going to happen. And rather than letting closed format proprietary engines like Silverlight or Apollo that are not the web, these are, you have to pay for tools, it's closed source, you can't see it, you can't use source on a Flash application, copy and paste, so it's not the web, it's something completely different. We're going to have a competitor based on web standards that can defeat Apollo and defeat Silverlight and give you a desktop experience on the web and a web experience on the desktop, seamless transition between the two. The web is going to take over, it's already happening. Happening with major applications in a year or two from now, there will not be any applications that are used on the desktop by any majority of people. And much of it's here now. If you haven't checked it out, we shipped Firefox 3, 5th alpha, a few weeks ago, and we're going to ship the beta sometime, what month are we in? still in June? Sometime in July, sorry, that's quite much. Sometime in July we're going to ship the beta, which is going to have the last of the features in it, but almost all of it's there now. Go to Mozilla.com and download this alpha. You're really going to like it. It's got cool stuff going on, especially if you develop applications or extensions. This is really going to be a major, major update for it. If you develop web pages, you need to see this now. And most important, Alien Cooper Firefox. It's a joke, but I want to say something here. This is, you guys get a Mac? Can you do conversions? 40,000 square feet. It's big, right? It's really fucking big. Some students from Oregon State University in Oregon, U.S., went out and planned in this field to stomp down the O's in the pattern of Firefox. It took them 24 hours. They were up at night with flashlights, duct tape to their vault. They videotaped the whole thing. It's in Google Maps and Google Earth. This is the kind of thing that gets Firefox new users. It seems kind of silly, but this was covered on television, it was covered in the newspapers, it was covered in the magazines. I'm here covering it with you. When we travel to Europe next, I want to be talking about the thing the kids did in Brazil. Right? You guys can beat that. How about the sugar cane deal? Maybe burn a giant. Someone suggested that on the market there. But like, something that's big enough that don't copy that. Do something better, right? But these are the kinds of things that people go, these guys are going to go down in history books. This is phenomenal. This is just cool ass shit. Huge! Like, you can't believe, like, people are like a duck, like this big on this. Right? It's bigger than a soccer league.
1,500 square meters, I guess.
It's huge. And they got permission from the farmer. And they came to me and they told me they were going to do this, and I was like, whatever, right? Like, no way, right? No way are you going to, how do you make a crop circle? I don't know how to make it. Do you know how to make this thing? Here's what they did. They took boards, like a 2x4 board, put a rope up on it in a loop, and they step down and they push the wheat down, they press it down, and then they take another step and stomp this board, and this board comes down and crushes the wheat down. And they march it all, they use strings on posts to scale the diagram it all out. They had radios out there, and they're like, go to coordinate 2, section 3, and coordinate 5, and dump down 10 paces, you know, it's kind of, they're doing all this in the middle of the freaking night, right? Well, we didn't support them. I didn't believe they'd be able to pull it off, but sometimes you trust, right? So they said, we want to get a helicopter when we're done, so we can fly over and get videotape from above, and it's going to cost us $500 to rent a helicopter for 1 hour. I was like, okay, this one time I'm going to support you. Gave me the money. They did this. If you Google Maps, when they did this, I was like, wow. I went across the street to my friend at Google, and I'm like, send your airplane. Get photographs. Get it into Google Maps. A month later, it was in Google Earth. A month after that, in Google Maps. You can see that thing from the airplane. Sure, it's gone now. It's all grown up over it. But when it was empty, that's freaking amazing. We want you guys to come up with something like that. We want you or your friends, or doesn't have to be this group of people. Pick the friends you hang out with, someone. Go do something. Go make something happen with Firefox. This is how we get users. It's doing things that get noticed. We can't afford what Microsoft and the other companies do to put $500 million of advertising on TV. Right? Microsoft brags about spending $500 million in 1 month on marketing. That's crazy. We can't compete with that. We'll never be able to compete with that. But we're taking users away from them, and we're doing it by things like this. So that's the wrap of my presentation. Let JT talk to you guys for a few minutes. Thanks for listening, and I'll sit down and shut up for a while.
So in because we only have about 15 minutes, my presentation will be to open it up for questions. I want to make sure you guys get a chance to ask this question.
I talked way too long. I tried to go fast, but
that was as fast as he's ever done, so. No, it's good. I thought it was very good. The other thing is, again, there's our email addresses. Please contact us, and we'd love to hear from
you. JTASA, both at Mozilla.
Yeah, we'd really love to hear from you. We'd really love for you guys to be involved. So, with that, I'd love to open up the questions. Everything's on the table.
Yeah, what do you want to ask people?
First, how do you get the company to get money to pay for it?
Sure. What's the second question?
We'll answer.
Okay, so 5 minutes about the components, the technical components that are divided into that.
Okay, I won't give it 5, but I'll give it 2.
Okay.
The first question, how do we make money? Most of it is search. We have partnered with companies to provide services that are built into the browser, and when you search with Firefox, and go to those companies' websites and view their ads, we get a share of that revenue. That amounts to about $55 million a year. Now, it's important to note, we didn't add that feature to make money. We added that feature way back in 1999 because it was good for users, and it wasn't until 2004 that we had a bunch of traffic coming from it, and they approached us and said, you're sending us a bunch of traffic, let's work something out. So we implement things to make the web better for users and web developers, and later we hope there's some way to stay in business. But before that, we were relying solely on donations and t-shirt sales. but we really were. We were begging people for money. And then we discovered this revenue model that really was not in our planning. Sometimes it pays to do the right thing, right? Sometimes take care of your users, provide a good experience, provide the best experience, and you get lucky. But had we decided that we were going to do what the other browsers did, which is sell out pieces of the browser in order to make money, we would have made a horrible experience. No one would use Firefox, and then there would be no money there. The second question is about architecture. I'm only going to give you 2 minutes, so JP should throw something at me when 2 minutes is up, because I'm not actually an engineer, but I do know how the pieces fit together. This bottom left layer is called NSPR. That's short for Netscape Portable Runtime. The oldest coding Mozilla. It dates back to like 1996. And what it is it abstracts out the platform. Every OS has different ways of doing like file I/O, right? Of reading and writing to the disk. It's different on Windows and on Unix and on Macintosh. This guy here, it takes care of it. You write one way into it, and it figures it out for all different OS. So it's real low-level functionality that makes it easy to program one time and have it work on the different engines. It's not like Java, though. It doesn't provide a lot of features. Just a few basic ones. File access, right? That's important, right? But it's actually a little smaller than it looks here, but, you know, we draw things kind of roughly, and it needed room for us to write all the stuff in there. But that's the sort of fundamental, most low-level thing we have. Above that, we have a collection of modules that are infrastructure, that help everything else work. The JavaScript engine, that's the actual engine that parses in the JavaScript and figures out what the hell it's supposed to do and gives output. It's the digester of JavaScript. We have our own cross-platform COM implementation that's used for connecting some of these modules up here to these modules down here using a bridge called XP-Connect. It allows you to have various access methods to your lower level code through different higher level languages. So for example, right now through XP-Connect you can script with JavaScript and call down to C++. And someone's adding a layer now, so you can script with Python and call down in C++. And someone's talking about doing it for Perl. It's kind of crazy, but mostly it's JavaScript. We have the security modules. These are also pretty old. These handle certificate management and ciphers and doing all the encryption and decryption stuff. Over here we have the networking library. This is what connects to the web and makes it possible to negotiate with servers. And it also handles some of the connecting to local file storage. Over here we have the widgets for event handling and windowing, those low-level things about I need a window, it needs to be this wide, right? I need to get focus from this window or to this tab. Here we have our graphics layer. Cairo is the bottom. Cairo handles the hardware, your graphics card, and makes calls into that. It can do like hardware acceleration. And above that, we have a layer called feeds. And what this is the thin little layer that is different between each of the platforms, so Macintosh and Windows and Linux, and connecting to their native graphics functions. Over here we have, used by many of these features, our storage system, which is new and moving away from old storage mechanisms to something called SQLite. It's a little SQL database, and that's where we'll store the places you've been on the web, your history, your bookmarks, your autocomplete, all that kind of stuff. Up here we have the content here. This is all the stuff that we have to parse and render. Right? So we have to parse the DOM that comes down through the HTML and build a DOM tree. And then we have to style it with CSS. We parse the style sheet and apply those rules to the DOM tree. We've got XML and HTML parsers that parse HTML and build up the HTML DOM. Then we've got XBL, which is our binding language, where you can bind widgets to each other using styles. You essentially can say, oh, that'll go on too long, I won't go into that. Zool is XML-based user interface language. We draw Firefox, the buttons and toolbars and scroll bars, everything you interact with, we draw it with the same engine that draws web pages. When you make a button in Firefox, The button up in the toolbar is a it's an XML box, and it's styled with CSS and images, and it functions JavaScript. It calls down into either other JavaScript functions or into C++ functions. So the browser is written using the language of the web. That's why there's so many extensions, because anyone can write front-end code for Firefox if you know how to write web pages. You can do the HTML, you can write Firefox features. It's really, really cool. Above that, we have some shared widgets that's in the toolkit, so like the autocomplete widget. We use it in search, we use it in the address bar, we use it in forms. It's the same thing that fills in autocomplete suggestions. That widget is shared across different places in Firefox and across different applications. So that's the toolkit, a common set of widgets that everyone needs to use. Most of those are implemented in JavaScript. They're JavaScript widgets. That makes them really portable. And then at the very top, we have the different applications. This is 90%. Those applications are the collection of all of this applied to a particular problem. The web, email, music players, peer-to-peer file sharing. It's a whole bunch of different applications that can easily be built on this stack. In that way, it is sort of like Java, except that it doesn't suck. I'm kidding. I know some of you guys like Java. But you can see that most of this goes down here, like JavaScript engine, it's implemented in C, I think. A lot of, I'm not kidding, maybe it's machine like Java. I think it's C. Most of the other stuff down here, C++. The widget layers up there, mostly JavaScript. The very front end, Zool, which is a combination of JavaScript, XML boxes, CSS for styling, images for images. And that's sort of the collection there. Any one of these has sort of an owner and a group of peers that people are familiar with that can make sure it stays in good shape. If you want to get involved in programming for any of those, rather than saying, how do I program for Firefox? Say, I want to work on the content stuff. I'm interested in why Firefox doesn't align things right when this CSS will apply. You want to go here and learn about the style system and learn about how we compute the style tree, right? How we interleave things here and apply style to DOM nodes and things like that.
All
right, my time's up.
Yeah.
Okay, if you want a really hard problem, go in and help Brendan write JavaScript too. He's a monster programmer, maybe one of the greatest in the world. There's lots to do here, and all of this you can find on the web, and who is involved in different areas. Development is great fun. The people are really, really knowledgeable. It's a good way to get experience with a real-world project with a lot of talented developers, and we don't even have aspirations. You can just start doing it. You don't have to ask for an internship and hope we say yes. Go start working on it. Write it down on your resume. You're a Firefox contributor. I'll get you a letter if you need one saying what you contributed to Firefox. It's a really awesome opportunity to learn real-world programming. And when you do something and it makes it in there, 100 million people are going to use it. How many other projects are you going to work on where you're going to have 100 million users using it? Not very many. So I think this is a really exciting opportunity for programmers. And if you haven't looked into getting involved, it's really easy. Find people in the community, report bugs, fix bugs, start with the easy stuff first, learn the hard stuff, look for challenges, have a good time.
Okay,
okay.
Next question.
Yep. One of the most good things of Firefox when you try to introduce it to other people is when this person tries to access the site and it doesn't work on Firefox. Usually it's crash site and now some type of scripts. What do you try to do to improve this issue?
So there's two things. One is we all need to put pressure on those websites to fix their sites. They're broken, it's not us. Seriously, right? Web authors should be writing websites to work with the standards. And when they do that, it will work in Firefox, it will work in Safari, it will work in Opera, mostly work in IE7, and require some hacks to work in IE6. That's the way people should be developing websites. If they're not, tell them they're wrong, and tell them they should fix it. You are customers of those services. Demand more for them. When you go drive on the highway, they don't decide, oh, you're driving a Fiat, roadblock, you have to be driving a Honda to get through. Bullshit, right? They're providing a service, and they should provide it fairly and equally to everyone. For the user who runs into this problem, it's getting less and less frequent. As our market share goes up, websites are less and less willing to throw away those users. You run a business, and you're going to tell 10%, 20%, 30% of your users to fuck off? No, and you'll go out of business, right? So I think that the important thing here is that's getting better. Tell users to use Firefox everywhere they can, and get the extension called IE Tab for sites where they can. And what this does is you go to a site that doesn't work, right click and say open an IE tab, it opens a new tab that uses IE rendering engine. Now during that time, they're insecure, because that's IE inside of Firefox. But it will let them access that one website, and then tell them to go back to Firefox for all the sites that do work. Because what that does is it ups the market share for Firefox, and then more sites are more willing to work with Firefox. So we really need to put pressure on both sides. Complain. There's a great little tool in Firefox. Go up to the help menu, and it says report a broken website. You report that, it looks at the site you're at, and gives you a little form to fill out, and you submit it to us. We look at those, and when enough people report a broken website, we go to that company and we go, you're throwing away users. Not just that, you're pissing them off. And you look stupid because you're not writing to web standards. But we're here to help you.
You know what? You guys can do that too.
And you can do that too. You can go to our tool and look at the broken websites. The ones in Brazil, we have a list. You can go search by .vr, right? Find the ones that are broken in Brazil that have a lot of reports. The tools are open. And look and see what's broken. And figure out the fix for it. Because most of it is simple fixes, right? It's really easy stuff. And send them an email. Say, here's the fix for your busted ass site. Fix it. Right? Or go grab that question and go to them and say, look how many other people are unhappy with your site. Shame them into fixing it. But all the time trying to increase more people using it is what matters. More people using Firefox, going to the website. And so in Germany, where we've got 40% market share, there isn't a single broken website.
That's true. The last question, sorry.
If you want more questions, you have to come to our event after this. Last question. Someone up here had their hand raised, and I went to the corner.
You talked about the Telegram before, right? And I was wondering, who invented Telegram? Was it Opera or Firefox?
It was neither one.
Neither one.
Tab browsing was invented by a person named Adam Stiles. Really smart guy, likes Firefox a lot, wrote a web browser called Netcapture. The first web browsers have two true tab browsers, Netcapture and Adam Stiles. When we made Firefox, we talked to them. We said, what do you think? It's much better than I ever did. I use Firefox. I love it. And we said, well, we want to credit you. When we're talking to people, may I ask that question? Is that cool? He said, yeah, sure. Nobody uses Netcapture anymore. He had a few users. But he is responsible for coming up with that idea. He didn't really invent it, right? Lots of dialogues have tabs on them. In Windows, your preferences, your options, there's tabs. Tabs are everywhere in computing. But to add it to the web browser was really, really smart and really useful. Adam Stiles was his name, I'm happy to credit him. It was not Firefox, it was not Opera, but we're the only ones who are crediting the true author. Anyone else who says they did it is full of shit.
So, again, sorry we have to be so brief. We have our next event. You guys are more than welcome. We'd love to see you there. Want to thank you guys very much for having us. We have some posters and some Firefox tattoos up here. So please come take them. And seriously, email us. If you have general questions, ask us. If you have ideas, ask us. If you want to get involved, ask us. That's what we're here for. So again, thank you very much for having us. Sorry we have to run, but appreciate all your help. Thank you.